state-level news, though, to get us started, the General Assembly is heading back to special session tomorrow at noon, ostensibly so lawmakers can dictate how the six proposed state constitutional amendments are going to appear on the November ballot. Of course, as with typical special sessions, it's open-ended, so other bills could theoretically be introduced as well. But that's the reason. There's a three-person commission that's charged with drafting the language for those proposed amendments, but two of the three are Democrats, and Republicans say that they want to draw up the language themselves. Joined now by WCHL News Director Blake Hodge, who's been following this, at least since we first started to hear about the rumors that there were going to be a special session, which was at the end of last week, right?
At tail end of last week, and then it really, David Lewis, the House Representative from Harnett County, he's chair of the Rules Committee, which has a lot of sway in the House, sending a letter asking House Speaker Tim Moore to call back a special session of the General Assembly in order to write these captions, basically. And there's a couple of different ways that this could go forward. We'll see how they attempt to tackle this tomorrow. One thing to note here is that there's a hard deadline on getting some of this information in to be able to get it on the ballot in time and all that kind of stuff. And you may think that the ballot is still a long way away, but absentee mail ballots go out very soon.
Right.
So that's...
Well, I assume they already have them drafted.
So. Well, yes, probably. But to actually get them, to get them on the ballot, something has to either change in terms of getting it approved by a three-fifths majority in both chambers, which is, I would say, the likelihood here. But if you're going to just change the law to where you're abolishing that amendment commission, then that would require legislation that would then have to go before the governor for his signature. So that's what I mean by the timeline being an issue there. So well, there is some maneuvering that's still going to have to happen, but you can be sure that they will get the maneuvering done.
And does that commission, and I don't know the answer to this question, I don't know if you do, does this commission exist because of a previous law, or does it exist because of a previous state constitutional provision that established
it?
Because
it was established, I forget exactly what year, but it was established not recently in order to do this function expressly.
Gotcha.
Which is the Secretary of State, which makes sense with the roles Secretary of State has, the Attorney General, which again, in their statewide role, makes a lot of sense, and then the Legislative Services Officer, who right now is Paul Coble. He was appointed to that job in 2015, selected to that job is probably a more appropriate word. He's a former Wake County Commissioner, former Raleigh Mayor, and a Republican. So it just happens to be that the two offices at the state level that would have, you know, kind of not only have some expertise in doing and crafting this language happen to be a couple of statewide officials that are Democrats right now, in Elaine Marshall and Josh Stein.
Right.
So, as it started to, everyone started to talk about this and realize who was going to be writing these, and not that it ever came from Elaine Marshall or Josh Stein, certainly, but a lot of people, specifically, I would say, a lot of people in our community, floating the idea of writing things that were maybe accurate in your perception, but certainly not in an objective fashion.
And I mean, that's going to be difficult to do with some of these amendments, which A, are fairly wide-reaching in a number of different ways, and B, are not specific. A lot of these, if they pass, you've got the General Assembly going back to session in December to clarify exactly what they meant. So
that's what
a lot of vagueness
about,
here.
About a month ago now, whenever you were out and Ashley Campbell was in, and that was one of the things that I was asking her about. Was the, you know, as from the kind of libertarian standpoint of this, are you fine giving the General Assembly, no matter the makeup of the General Assembly, free rein to write a law after you've already signed the check, kind of thing? Because it says to present a photo ID to vote. If that is the caption.
Yeah.
We still don't know
what constitutes a photo ID.
Right. And they'll
go bipartisan ethics and elections enforcement is the one that I'm thinking of, because A, it says we're creating this bipartisan ethics and elections committee, which sounds great, but what's the difference between the committee that currently exists and the change that the amendment is proposing? That's not specified as well. And that's provision, what, one of three in that amendment? And the other two are taking power away from the governor, taking power away from the governor, taking power away from the governor. And that's an equally significant component of that amendment. So to say we need an objective description of what the constitutional amendment is, you should just take the constitutional amendment, stick it on the ballot, and tell voters, here it is.
Yeah.
And even that's not enough information, because what's the current law that's being changed? What are the rationales? I have a problem with referendums and initiative.
I've made this
argument before.
What if we do six of them at once? Is that help or hurt?
No, not really. Yeah.
You need a little extra booklet of just the amendments if you want to do it this way, of being able to. And that's the difficulty. You know, we talk about this in a lot of cases, and it's not to disparage everyday run-of-the-mill citizens about knowing what's going on, but we talk about it in local elections, whether there's it's turnout issues or knowledge on who actually is running and what they're actually running for and what they actually are running on.
It's why we have representative democracy in the first place, right? Because it takes way too much time and energy to obtain all of the information that you would need in order to make an informed decision. And so we elect people who make that their full-time job. And that's the reason for that. You take things and stick them on the ballot without all of the information that people will need to make an informed decision. It is very easy for less than entirely scrupulous people, or people who have a vested interest in voters voting one way or the other. And I could absolutely see conservatives who want these amendments to pass saying, oh, Elaine Marshall or Josh Stein are going to do something, but the Republicans are going to write up captions too that make them sound great, like Amendment 3, puppies, yay, exclamation point. Yeah. And it's theoretically accurate, but it doesn't give you nearly as much information. This was, there was a case in Michigan, and this was 15 years ago or so, where there was a group of people that wanted the state to repeal its I think it was University of Michigan's anti-discrimination policy when it comes to admissions. So it was an affirmative action program that Michigan had with admissions, like every other college in America, but they wanted Michigan to eliminate this. And you have to get a certain number of signatures on a petition in order to put it on the ballot in Michigan. So they circulated this petition around, but they didn't tell people what they were signing. They said, would you like to sign the civil rights bill? Would you like to sign the civil rights bill? And technically, it's a proposal that has to do with the concept of civil rights, but it's deliberately deceptive in order to get people to do or to support the thing that you want. Yeah. It's a frequent and common issue.
Yeah, so we'll again have to see how that language actually develops. One thing that I'm curious about is public comment on it, because the commission, as it is currently constituted, had already opened a public comment window, was scheduled to have a meeting
Next week, 31st.
To then have everything kind of moving in the right direction, because they do have a deadline that they have to work by there in early August to get that done. So whether
and theoretically, if you're listening out there and you want to submit suggestions, you still got until Wednesday. I think they're still taking.
Yeah, no, you can find the link at chapelworld.com and submit them online. But whether they're, I don't know where they're going at this point, if the General Assembly has already called themselves back to go ahead and write this kind of outright. So I think that it's going to certainly be a controversial, I was going to say week, however long they are at the General Assembly this time around, and we'll see if they try to bring anything else up, lawmakers in general trying to get anything else on the agenda, because it is a very wide-ranging call back for a special session. I imagine that they will not be around too long, because you're not allowed to fundraise while the General Assembly is in session. So that's something to keep in mind as well with the elections approaching in November.
Speaking with WCHL's Blake Hodge, so that's going on. The other election-related thing that's happening at the state level, and this is not going to happen until the beginning of next month, right? But it's coming up quick. The State Board of Elections is going to be meeting and they are going to have to decide on early voting locations and times and days and hours for all of the counties where the county boards of elections were not able to reach unanimous agreement. That includes Orange County. So we've got three different proposals that are going before the state board
there
now.
16 counties were not able to reach.
Wake was another one.
Wake,
right?
Durham, yeah. Orange.
Okay.
Several large counties were unable to, to reach a unanimous.
Were they primarily
decision.
Large counties or?
No.
No,
okay. Because everybody, you know, we can get into this, but with the reach of this, people have a lot of varying issues, and we'll get into that in a minute. But it certainly is not exclusively large counties. 16 counties were unable to reach a unanimous approach, and that's a little bit different this year as well because of the bipartisan Elections and Ethics Enforcement Board action at the state level that added another member to all of the county boards. So now there are four members, so you have to get two Democrats, two Republicans to unanimously agree on one plan for it to be done and just submitted to the state and move on from there. So not surprising, especially in Orange County, where it's been a sticking point in recent years. You know, back in 2016, I remember covering this where the state board ultimately had to decide on this. And this was after hours worth of meetings about this had been held at the county level. And then they got to the state and they had 2 minutes, I believe, to present all the county plans. And then the state basically moved on in about 15 seconds, just kind of approving.
And again, that's probably the state board members taking a look at the proposal earlier in the day.
And this was after the state board had already had, again, an hours-long meeting at that point, trying to determine this same thing for counties
across
the state.
For a whole bunch of other counties, of course.
So we'll see how this goes moving forward. But we have three plans. Bob Randall submitted his own plan. He's the secretary of the board. He is one of the two Republicans on the board, and his is stripped back pretty bare bones for just his individual proposal. This has four sites open, so that's eliminating the Eflin-Ruritan Club site in this plan. It also has the, you know, part of the General Assembly ruling this year is that any auxiliary sites outside of the Board of Elections have to be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and they all have to be open uniform hours on the weekends. So his would eliminate a lot of that, 7 to 7 on weekdays, and then only have that final Saturday of early voting on weekends, which is mandated by the law, and that would be from 8 until 1. That's very likely not going to be considered very
Should mention the Eflin-Ruritan site is easily the least trafficked of the five typical early voting sites.
Yeah, it's been picking up. And it is.
I mean, it gets.
It's the only one that is in its location. You know, you get like running through the rest of them. It's the Hillsboro, the Board of Elections office in Hillsboro. Then Carborough Town Hall, Chapel of the Cross, and the Seymour Center are all very convenient for Chapel Hill Carborough residents
and Hillsboro,
not for anybody else, really. So Eflin really has served that community quite well in Orange County. So the biggest sticking point here moving forward is Sunday voting. And we saw Jamie Cox and Elvira Mebane dig their heels in this year on Sunday voting. They were not going to consider any plans that did not involve Sunday voting, and Bob Randall made it clear that he was not going to consider any plans that did involve Sunday voting. So Kathy Knight is an interesting position here. She is a Republican, but was willing to have initially, not on her proposed plan, but was at least willing to talk about Sunday voting, but ultimately they could never agree to one thing. So Jamie Cox and Elvira Mebane, the two Democrats on the board, submitted a plan that calls for the five sites, the Board of Elections, Carborough Town Hall, Chapel of the Cross, Seymour Center, and Eflin-Ruritan Club, 7 to 7 at all those sites during the weekdays, 8 until 3 on all the Saturdays. So that would be three Saturdays of early voting, and 1 to 3 p.m. on Sundays. And that, you know, that was kind of a complicating factor on Sundays because people want Sunday hours, but whenever one of your locations is a church,
you then
you have to have uniform hours.
Yes.
So
it's got to be like
it's got to be 1 to 3
there
for the Sunday voting. So I think it's a possibility that it ends up happening this year, but the state board will have to be considering this. We were talking about the different challenges that are presented from different counties on this. if you're looking at Orange and Durham and Wake, it's these types of issues. Mm-hmm. Is that extra site going to be open? Is it going to be open on Sundays?
Right.
All these other things. If you get down into, and these are all counties in Orange and Durham and Wake where the commissioners are going to fund, well, statutorily they have to fund whatever's mm-hmm. passed by the board, but they're not going to have an issue
funding. They're not
going
to make a big stink about
whatever,
it, right?
Whatever the hours end up being, have a billion hours.
So when the state board meets, and I can't remember how this all shook out 2 years ago, but when the state board meets, are they deciding on one of those three proposals, or is it a possibility that they can put their own in?
They can say, I like this plan that's submitted by Jamie Cox and Elvira Mebane. They can say, I like this plan from Kathy Knight and Bob Brandel, or I like just Bob's plan. But they have to agree to it as well. So,
yeah.
There's going to be that negotiation. So they can either take one of those three, or they can use elements of those three mm-hmm. and implement their own plan, which...
So they've got basically
kind of
four options
yeah,
there. They've got the three in front of them, and then the fourth, which is whatever they want to put
together.
Anything
exactly.
else. Yeah.
That's a pretty
four
broad
options.
Fourth
yes.
option.
Yeah. This one, that one, the third one, or whatever
Any
else you
ideas?
Want.
Any other
ideas? Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that's coming up. Again, the deadline to submit plans was July 20th, so that happened on Friday. Coming up in early August, the state board is going to have their training session, so all of the county boards will be in Winston-Salem at one time. So very likely, nothing is official yet, but everybody seems to be thinking that is
right.
when the state board is going to be deciding on these plans. So that would be August 5th through the 7th, sometime in that window. And I just want to hit on this. In those smaller counties, the issue is going to be having extra sites have to have uniform hours is really a cost issue at the county levels where they just don't have the extra resources in terms of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things where everybody on this board, Republicans and Democrats, said that the General Assembly, I believe Kathy Knight's words were, had lost their mind in terms of how they were doing this, because it's not reasonable in the minds that we heard, at least at the County Board of Elections level, to have all of these sites open all this time, because it's known that people aren't going to come maybe to
between like
Chapel of the Cross between 7 and noon,
right.
or the Seymour Center between 7 and noon. But that's why they would only open it from noon until 7 and have that type of flexibility in there throughout this process. So in making them have uniform hours, it seems to have depleted a lot of flexibility, and then also made some of these other counties really strip it all the way back to, at the end of the day, they only have to have the County Board of Elections office open 8 to 5 mm-hmm. leading up to election day.
Keep following all that. Blake Hodge, thank you so much.